Chapter 54. The Lion's Share. A commissionaire packed us into a hansom, looking at my shilling as if it were a dog dropping. I cannot imagine why Prince Ulrich would need to force himself on women. I wondered if it was just the motion of our cab making me feel a bit queasy.
Ours is to reason why.
My guardian sounded uncharacteristically philosophical.
Explain the grounds for your incomprehension.
The streets of our capital city were never quiet, but the amount of traffic at night was a fraction of that in the daytime. He is rich, titled, handsome, and charming, I reeled off. All very desirable attributes. Mr. G. pondered my remarks.
You might be wise not to set your sights on him as a husband, he advised, as we swerved round an oyster stall set up illegally on the road.
This was my chance, and emboldened by alcohol and his mellow mood, I decided to take it. Speaking of
motives,
he completed my phrase by substituting his own word.
Some men do not want women to acquiesce, but get a distorted pleasure from the distress that they cause.
And you think Prince Ulrich may be one of those men?
I have not said so.
I had almost forgotten my grievance until I reached out to stop my handbag sliding off the seat and felt it still damp. You fired that air gun deliberately, I accused.
I have never activated a firearm accidentally,
he admitted, elbowing me into giving him his usual lion's share of space. To stop me starting another argument with the prince about Africa, I surmised.
If that had been my purpose, I could have aimed at you,
he reasoned, uncorking his flask, which the concierge had arranged to have replenished for our long journey along two streets.
But it was a collateral bonus.
Mr. G. waited until we had passed the new pet shop, where he knew the road would be less potholed, before he poured half a cup of hot tea.
And how else was I to obtain and retain the missile?
I opened the clasp and rooted through. Apart from my father's cigarette case and flask, and of course the bag itself, I could find no other damage as we whisked along through the intermittent pools of gaslight. A misshapen ball of lead had come to a halt after bruising but not piercing my travelling journal. I reached in.
Do not scratch it,
my guardian urged anxiously, and I was sorely tempted to throw the useless lump out into the gutter. There. I tipped it into his gloved hand, and he regarded it fondly.
Now all I have to do is find a way of restoring it and its fellow to their original shapes.
That should be easy, I remarked, and he glanced at me.
Was that
sarcasm? I said, before he had the chance to ask. Sidney Grice leaned hard against me. With any other man, I might have thought he was making advances, but we were swinging left into Gower Street, and he was more interested in preserving his beverage than in my comfort.
125,
our driver announced.
It is a different breed,
Mr. G. muttered, flicking the last of his tea onto the floor and my dress.
What is?
The cabbie hauled open his hatch.
I am so sorry.
My guardian passed up three coins.
I only understand 8 languages, plus a smattering of American. I never troubled to learn inarticulacy.
And Sidney Grice was rapping on his own front door before I had pushed my way out through the flaps.